Heaven, thank you for today. Thank you for these ladies who come out weekly to study your word. I pray that you would be with us today as we study Leviticus 14 and 15, more clean, unclean laws, Lord. And I pray that we would see your holiness, that you are holy and separate, and that we as believers are to be separate from the world as well. We love you. Be with us in our study today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so if you remember chapter 10, right? Nadab and Abihu, they offer strange fire to the Lord and get consumed. The fire, they become the sacrifice. And then God says to Aaron, right, in verse 10 of chapter 10, that he has to make the distinction between holy and profane and between unclean and clean. Okay, so that is the setup for chapters 11 through 15, and then also for 17 and following after the Day of Atonement, because that's where we're going to get more of the holy and profane. Okay, so we get all the laws about clean and unclean, and it's all set up in the context of Nadab and Abihu. So you get it right or you're dead. So we think the laws are tedious and how does this apply to me? But they paid close attention because they had to know when they were clean and unclean, because they did not want to go to tabernacle when they were unclean. And some of these things that we're even going to talk about today, nobody else necessarily would have known, right? So there are some, like, okay, a skin disease. That might be a little more obvious. You're unclean. You don't go to tabernacle. But then there were other things. It's like, did you touch a woman who had her period? Well, who's going to know that, right? Nobody except for you. And so not only did the priests have to know, but the average person had to know, because they had to know when they were clean and they were unclean. So we're going to do chapters 14 and 15 today. Chapter 13, if you remember, was all about skin disease. And we talked about how the word in Hebrew, tzara'at, is the same word for the skin disease, the mark on clothes. And then today we're going to talk about marks on houses, leprous marks on houses. So we talked about how the skin disease really wasn't what we think of as leprosy. Okay, it could have been a variety of different skin diseases all by the same word. Okay, and we don't have a good English word that translates skin disease, mildew on houses and on clothes. Okay, so if in your, at least in the NAS, it'll say a mark of leprosy on clothes or a mark of leprosy on the house. Okay, that's how they try to do it. So chapter 13 was all about leprosy. Chapter 14, we're going to learn what you had to do if you were healed from the skin disease. Okay, so you got the skin disease, you're unclean. Remember, you're cast outside the camp. It's basically a living death. You are outside the camp. No one's allowed to touch you. You're not allowed to be in fellowship with God. Okay, so what happens when you are healed? All right, so could someone read for me verses 1 through 9? Of chapter 14, Leviticus 14, verse 1 through 9.
The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This shall be the law of the leprous person for the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go out of the camp, and the priest shall look. Then if the case of leprous disease is healed in the leprous person, the priest shall command them to take for him who is to be cleansed to live two live clean birds and cedar wood and scarlet yarn and hyssop. And the priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthenware vessel over the fresh water. He shall take the live bird with the cedar wood and the scarlet yarn and the hyssop and dip them and the live bird in the blood and the bird that was killed over the fresh water. And he shall sprinkle it seven times on him who is to be cleansed of the leprous disease. Then he shall pronounce him clean and shall let the living bird go into the open field. And he who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shall and shave off all of his hair, and bathe himself in water, and he shall be clean. And after that he may come into the camp, but live outside his tent 7 days. And on the seventh day he shall shave off all of his hair from his head, his beard, and his eyebrows. He shall shave all off all his hair. And then he shall wash his clothes, and bathe his body in water, and he shall be clean."
Okay, so these are the initial rituals that had to be done by the person who had the skin disease, okay? These are rituals. They don't cure anything. This is not a healing ceremony, okay? It's nothing but ritual. The surrounding nations, they, when they got sick, would try to be cured by magical rites or exorcism or some hocus pocus, right, to try to heal themselves, okay? Israel was to rely on the Lord. The priests were not healers. They were not even really doctors that diagnosed diseases. They just said, yep, something's wrong, you're unclean. Okay, they didn't even say specifically what. Yeah.
So, sorry, just to
that's okay.
Is it even though they, like, where they weren't healed, so they could have still had the skin disease even though they did all this? I guess I didn't.
Okay, so when they got sick, no, that's okay. When they got sick with the skin disease, right, and the priest says, you're unclean, they had to go outside the camp. Then if they got better, right, if it just went away, if God healed them, or the disease, skin disease ran its course or whatever, and it was no longer there, then they would call the priest. And then the priest comes out and confirms, yes, there's no longer a skin disease. Now we can start the ritual of becoming clean, because remember, you're unclean and outside the camp. You've been basically an outcast, okay? But now that skin disease is gone, okay? So, but again, the priests did not heal. They did not even really diagnose, like saying, this is specifically what's wrong with you. They just said, you're unclean or you're clean.
So pretty much they just waited till this whatever
went away.
Yeah.
Yep, mm-hmm. And so if it's a chronic something or whatever, or it needs some treatment, you may die, right, outside the camp, never be made right. clean again.
I know, like, when I was listening to your chapter 12 and 13 about, or 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the skin disease, it wasn't necessarily leprosy.
No.
Because I was thinking, I'm thinking, leprosy was kind of like a death sentence, wasn't it? Like,
right, right. But it's not, yes, it most likely was not what we think of today as leprosy. Okay, the rituals are long and complicated and to us seem a little weird, right? But the person is being readmitted to society, and then the second step is readmitted to fellowship with God. So this verse 1 through 9 is making him clean enough to enter the camp, and then we're going to see 10 through 20 is when he has to go to tabernacle and offer sacrifices to reengage in fellowship with God, okay? So we start outside the camp and we end up in the tabernacle, okay? Where for the cleansing of a leper, they had to offer all the sacrifices except for the peace offering. They had to offer the sin, guilt, and grain and whole burnt offering, all of them, okay, except for the peace offering. All right, so verse 2, well, so first one, the Lord says to Moses, verse 2, if the leper is cleansed, okay, in the day of his cleansing, he shall be brought to the priest. Verse 3, the priest shall go outside the camp, okay? So even if the guy thinks he's clean, he can't come running into camp, okay? He has to send for the priest. So people outside the camp, I'm sure other people would come visit and stay their distance, I'm sure, social distancing. Yeah, right. Except this is something God says, not something man made up. And so they would have to send someone in to fetch the priest. And then the priest would go outside the camp. The leper wasn't allowed to come waltzing into camp and say, I'm clean, okay?
This is annoying. Why did they use the word cleansing there? Because it's kind of confusing, because it says to me.
Yes.
You know, in the day of his cleansing, that makes it sound like he was already pronounced clean by the priest. So what they really mean is in the day of his he's all better now.
Well, okay, so this shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. I think that's basically saying this is how the leper becomes clean.
Okay.
He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go outside the camp. And then it says, thus the priest shall look, and if the infection of leprosy has been healed in the leper.
Okay.
Right, so the leper's, or the skin diseased man, is going to only send for a priest if he thinks he is healed, right?
So, see, I separated the cleansing, like in the day he was already healed.
Oh, yeah.
Better, but you're saying the leper in the day of his cleansing.
Right, right. And it's kind of like a title. So this is how the leper becomes clean. When he thinks he's healed, he sends for the priest. The priest comes outside the camp, and he's the one that has to inspect. Okay, he has to determine whether he has been healed or not, most likely using the criteria from chapter 13, doing chapter 13 all over again. Remember, they had to look at the spot, and if it was deeper than the skin, right, then he's unclean, or but if it's just on the surface of the skin or if it's gone altogether, right, he's going to say he's clean or he's been healed. Okay, so if he has been healed, then the priest has to gather all these things, okay? Two live clean birds, okay? Cedar wood, a scarlet string, and hyssop, okay? These are the items that are needed for this ritual, okay? So one bird, so you have two birds. One of them is killed, one of them is not. The first one is killed in a clay pot over running water. There is disagreement on what this means. One of the commentaries I read thought that when I just read it, it sounds to me like you're supposed to actually kill the bird in the pot, like put the bird in the pot and then wring its neck or something while it's in the pot. Another commentary said there's to kill the bird, but then catch the blood in the pot. Because the point really is the blood, right? Because they have to dip the stuff in the blood. So the point of killing the bird is you need to get its blood. Okay, and then it says over running water or fresh water. I think yours said fresh water, right? You can also say living water. One of my commentaries thought that they just mixed the blood with water. So I don't know. To me, this sounds like you do it. But then it's like they're in the desert for 40 years. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of running water, fresh running water everywhere. But God always did provide them with water, so they had to have a source. So I'm not exactly sure. Yeah, maybe. That's a good idea. Okay, so you kill one bird, catch its blood, whether you kill it in the pot or you catch the blood in the pot, either way. And then you have to dip all these things in it and sprinkle the man. So there's also controversy here whether or not, okay, the live bird gets dipped as well. But some people think that they took the wood, the hyssop, and the bird, tied it all together with the red string, and then dipped that and used the bird also for sprinkling, which you can imagine the commotion the bird would make, right? Or some people think that they just dipped the wood and the hyssop tied together with the string, right, and sprinkled, and then you just dip the bird 7 times and then you let it go. So regardless, this poor bird's traumatized. So whether the bird is used for the sprinkling or not, I'm not sure. It kind of sounds like he is, because it says, as for the live bird, he shall take it together, right, with the cedar wood, the scarlet string, and the hyssop, and she'll dip them in the live bird in the blood of the bird that was slain over the running water. He shall then sprinkle 7 times the one who is to be cleansed from the leprosy, and shall pronounce him clean. Okay? So sprinkling of blood is very common in this God's system, God's model of Leviticus, right? When the covenant was ratified in Exodus 24, right? The people are all sprinkled with blood. When the priests are ordained, they are sprinkled with blood, okay? So here, and I mean, even on Day of Atonement, they're going to sprinkle blood on the mercy seat. And here, when the leper is to be cleansed, he is sprinkled with blood actually multiple times. This is the first time. Okay, so here he is sprinkled with blood. I could not figure out in my research what the cedar wood was for, if it represents anything. So I have no idea. It's used, the cedar wood is also used in Numbers 19, verse 6 and 18. And that's cleansing specifically after touching a dead body, okay? So this cedar wood, scarlet yarn, hyssop combination is also used there in Numbers chapter 19, okay? I have no idea.
According to the book, The Three Talking Trees, it was.
It's a good story, but I don't know if it's authoritative. I don't know.
Is that kid's book? Yeah, well, it could be for adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just about trees and how one was made into a boat for Jesus.
Into a manger, and one was made into the cross. Yes, there is. Anyways, so possibly I don't know that. Okay, the scarlet string This is the same that was used in the tabernacle. If you remember, in the tabernacle, you had to build both the blue, the purple, and the scarlet. Okay? So this is, and obviously, it's not a string from the tabernacle, but it's the same type that was used in the tabernacle. Okay? Isaiah 1:18 is the verse that says, though my sin was as scarlet, right, you make it white as snow. So the scarlet may represent blood. It may represent sin. The hyssop plant, okay, in Exodus 12:22, if you remember, this is Passover, and you were to use hyssop to spread the blood over the door of Passover. Okay? Also, in Psalm 51:7, let's turn there really quick. Can someone read for me Psalms 51:7. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's David, and he's, you know, cleanse me with hyssop, because hyssop has now become, it's used in these different rituals, and it's symbolic of being cleansed, okay? John, what's interesting is also John 19:29, when Jesus is on the cross, and they offer him wine to drink. John 19:29, they offer it to him on a hyssop branch, okay? John 19:29, when Jesus is dying on the cross. Yes. And then what's the next verse, Mom?
Therefore, when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished," and he bowed his head and gave up his spirit.
Right. So he receives the wine on the hyssop branch, and then he dies. Okay? So we can see hyssop is at least symbolically used in all these different areas. It seems to be cleansing. Right? And so then that would make sense why Jesus gets it on a hyssop branch, because he is the ultimate cleansing for us. Okay? And the Passover, right? That was the first time when they're saved, right? Israel is saved from the death of the firstborn. Okay? Then you have the bird, the poor traumatized bird that's been dipped 7 times in blood, either tied up with the hyssop in the cedar or not, regardless. It is let go. Okay, this possibly symbolizes the leper's release from quarantine or his uncleanness being carried away. Okay, kind of like the scapegoat. It reminds us of the scapegoat on Day of Atonement when you have 2 goats. One is killed, one is let go. Okay, to symbolize taking of the sin off into the wilderness. Okay. So, after he is sprinkled 7 times, the leper, he then washes his clothes, shaves his hair, and bathes in water. Frequently, to become clean, you had to wash your clothes and bathe in water. Okay, so this, the added step here, is you, they had to shave off all their hair.
Do you find it interesting that, and I realize that's just a manner of speaking, but it doesn't say, in some places it says someone, but it's always he. And can you imagine if this was, it had to be a woman. I mean,
I'm sure. Yeah. Miriam gets leprosy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even a man, though, to shave the beard was shameful.
Right?
When, oh, what, it's somewhere in Kings when some king captures them and they shave like half their beard, right? Then they're put away for a time until their beard grows back. Okay, so this, a man even, I mean, so you would be able to even tell someone who had been cleansed, because they would be totally shaved. And they do it twice. They do it here and then again on day 7 before they go to tabernacle. They're shaved again, all their hair. So, I mean, for a woman or a woman to lose her long hair or a man to lose his beard would be, well, and they weren't supposed to cut the corners of their hair either, so.
Right.
So, yeah, it would have been very obvious.
I'm missing eyebrows.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a while, but they do eventually.
That's funny. But think of this, though. You have been put outside the camp. You are not in fellowship with anyone, not in fellowship with God, right? So this is a cleansing ritual. And when you were declared unclean, you basically went into mourning, right? You tore your clothes, you messed up your hair, and you had to cry, unclean, unclean. You had to cover your face. So this, I'm sure, was, even though you had to shave all your hair, was a joyful ceremony because you now get to enter back into society, enter back into fellowship with God. But yes, it would have been, I mean, it would have been obvious to anyone. Okay, so after this, after he shaves, bathes, washes his clothes, he is allowed, he is clean enough to go back into the camp, but he is not to go to his own tent or his own home. So I suppose he boards with somebody for the 7 days. He's not allowed back into his own tent for 7 days. Okay, and he is not fully clean until day 8 when he goes to tabernacle to make his sacrifices. Okay, and so again, verse 9, it will be on the 7th day that he shall shave off all his hair. He shall shave his head, his beard, his eyebrows, even all his hair. He shall then wash his clothes and bathe in his body in water and be clean. So again, so before he comes into camp, he bathes, washes clothes, shaves. Day 7, does it all again, bathes, washes his clothes, and shaves. Okay.
So what little has grown back.
Right.
Right,
which a beard, if you're pretty hairy, you know, in 7 days you can have a beard again, you know, and so you got to shave it all again. Okay? That they can't go home? Yeah. I don't really know why, it's just what God said.
Besides being spiritual, a practical...
Right. Right, but maybe it's because you are now clean enough to enter camp, but you have not entered into fellowship with God yet, so maybe you can't go get comfortable. I don't know, because you haven't fully...
Right, you can't go to your house, but you can go sleep on somebody's couch.
Right.
You can't sleep on your own couch.
Right, right, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yep. Okay, any questions? Okay, so can someone read for me Leviticus 14:10-20?
And the aforesaid before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Then the priest shall take one male lamb and bring it for a guilt offering with a log of oil and present them as a wave offering before the Lord. Next he shall slaughter the male lamb in the place where they slaughter the sin offering and the burnt offering at the place of the sanctuary for the guilt offering. Like the sin offering belongs to the priest, it is the most holy. The priest shall then take some of the blood of the guilt offering, and the priest shall put it on the lobe of the right ear of the one to be cleansed, and on the thumb of his right hand, and on the big toe of his right foot. The priest shall also take some of the log of oil and pour it into his left palm, and the priest shall then dip his right hand finger into the oil that is in his left palm, and with his finger sprinkle some of the oil 7 times before the Lord. Of the remaining oil which is in his palm, the priest shall put some of the right earlobe of the one to be cleansed, put some on the right earlobe of the one to be cleansed, and on the thumb of his right hand, and on the big toe of his right foot, on the blood of the guilt offering, while the rest of the oil that is in the priest's palm, he shall put on the head of the one to be cleansed. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf before the Lord. The priest shall next offer the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. Then afterwards he shall slaughter the burnt offering. The priest shall offer up the burnt offering and the grain offering on the altar. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him and he will be clean.
Okay, so...
Way too much for him. What? I mean, I hope this is all written down. And then I would be confused as to, okay, you're right, my right, you're right, wait.
Oh my goodness. Okay, what's interesting, so these are the sacrifices that have to be made, but what's interesting is almost all the discussion is about the guilt offering.
Yeah.
When you get to the sin and the burnt and the grain, it's two verses. It's like, oh yeah, and then you do this too. Okay? So this is what really sets apart the cleansing of the leper. Okay, first of all, this is expensive. You have to bring three lambs. Okay? So two male lambs, a female lamb, and a grain offering, and oil, okay, for sprinkling. Okay, so the first offering that is made is the guilt offering. So this is what puzzles everybody. Why does a guilt offering have to be made? Do we remember why were guilt offerings typically made? Do we remember chapters 5 and 6? I'm sorry, what?
Was that the sin of somebody else?
Yes, specifically what? Yes, where restitution was required, you had to make a guilt offering. Okay, so if you stole something, okay, you had to make a guilt offering and then pay back 120% of what you owed, okay? And you had to make the payment first and then come do your guilt offering, okay? Do you remember there was another situation? Okay, so if you sinned against somebody else, but what was the first instance of, there were three situations where you had to make a guilt offering. So the sin against someone else is number two, I believe. What was the first one? Okay, that was the third. So if you feel guilty about something but you don't know why, you could make a guilt offering. Now, you wouldn't have to pay anything because you don't know what you did. Okay? So what was the first one?
Sin with a high hand.
No. Sin with a high hand, like defiant sin.
Is it sin against God?
Yes. If you sin against God's holy things, then you had to make payment to the tabernacle, to the priests themselves. Okay, so you either sin against God's holy thing where you make payment to the tabernacle, you've sinned against someone else where you owe them something, okay, you make payment to them, or you feel guilty, you don't really know why, but just in case you make a sin offering, or a guilt offering. Okay, so those were the three. So why in the world does the leper have to make a guilt offering? And notice there is no mention of payment of anything besides the offering itself. You don't have to pay something on top of it. Okay, so there are two theories, of course. Okay, the first kind of falls under the I did something, but I'm not sure what I did, and so I offer a sin offering, a guilt offering. Okay, skin disease is often a punishment from God. So they might look at it, you got a skin disease, you must have done something because God is punishing you, therefore we're going to have you offer a guilt offering. Okay, let's go to Numbers. We're just going to look at a couple examples where God strikes somebody with skin disease. Can someone read for me verse 9 and 10? Numbers verse 9 and 10. Numbers 12. Sorry. Numbers 12, verse 9 and 10. Okay, so this is when Aaron and Miriam come up to Moses and say, hey, God doesn't always speak to you. He speaks to us too, right? And they were basically trying to displace Moses as the leader. And God gets angry. And what does he do? He strikes Miriam specifically. Okay? We'll look at one more. 2 Kings 5. Second Kings 5, 25 to 27. Holy cow. 2 Kings 5, 25 to 27. Yes, keep going.
Did a time to receive money, to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and ox and male and female servants? Oh, therefore the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendant forever. So he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow.
Okay, so this was when Elisha heals Naaman. Right, Naaman says, well, I'll give you anything, you know, what do you want as reward? And Elisha says, nothing. Yeah, he doesn't want to take anything. So Naaman goes on his way, and his servant Gehazi is like, well, I'm going to take up this offer of free stuff. So he goes chasing after him and says, oh, Elisha changed his mind, right? And so because he did that, right, and God told Elisha, then now Gehazi has leprosy, right, as judgment from God. We're not going to turn there, but 2 Chronicles 26, 16 to 21, I believe it's Uzziah. Just make sure that that's right. Yes. I believe, yes, Uzziah, he tries to offer incense in the tabernacle or in the temple. Okay. He's not supposed to. He's a king, not a priest. Okay. And God strikes him with leprosy. Okay. So there are cases in the Old Testament where God uses leprosy as a judgment. Okay. So that's one theory. Just my own opinion, don't necessarily think that's the reason, because that doesn't mean, just because God uses leprosy as a judgment doesn't mean every single time, right, someone got leprosy that it would have been God's judgment. Okay, people do get sick just because we live in a fallen world. Okay, and God might have used that as judgment because that is very harsh, right? Because you get leprosy, now you're, not only are you sick, you are now outside the camp. Okay. The second reason why a guilt offering may have been offered here is that you owed God. You needed to pay God back for all the sacrifice, tithes, first fruit offerings that you were unable to make because you were unclean, right? God commands you to do all these things. Well, now you're unclean. You're outside the camp and you can't. You can't do any of them. And it's not like you're unclean for only a short time, so then you can come back and do it. So I think this is maybe more likely that you quote unquote owe God the sacrifices that you've missed while you were unclean. And so you offer a guilt offering, and one offering makes up for all the ones that you've missed. Okay. So
how long were they out?
Who knows?
Right. But I mean, some could have been that short and they didn't miss much.
Right. And some could have been years. Right. And then they miss lots. Right. And the Bible doesn't specifically say, hey, this is why you have to make a guilt offering. So all of this, for your consideration, but don't take it as gospel truth, right? Because the Bible doesn't say specifically this is why you had to make a guilt offering. It's just interesting that they have to make a guilt offering and a sin offering. Okay, but again, if you read it, there is no language about forgiveness of sins. Right? It says you will make atonement, but there is no specific language, your sins will be forgiven, right? Because all of this, again, is a result of sin in general, not sin specific.
And what you said, it might have just been like maybe he was only sick for a week, mm-hmm. But then it also says that if you sin in one point, it says if you sin at all.
Yeah.
When they had the 12 tribes and there were the people living in the north. And
no, the priests would have still had to come out, and they still would have had to make the journey down on day 8 to Jerusalem to make sacrifice.
Outside the camp, it was outside of whatever village.
I guess so, yes. I'm sure there was an unclean spot, yeah.
Right. Well, I know there was, during the time of Jesus, there were the leper colonies. Yeah,
yeah.
Outside.
Right.
But if they lived
right
in the north, in Naphtali or wherever.
Yes. Right. Out, yeah, an unclean spot.
A priest would have to go up there?
Yeah, no, so you have, probably. Probably, now priests were not all necessarily just living in Jerusalem because they had cities, right, all over. Now, they might have traveled to Jerusalem when it was their turn to serve.
Right.
But then they would have gone back home after their turn to serve was up, like Zechariah and Elizabeth. Right. Possible. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Bible doesn't give us all those particulars, but I would think practically that might be.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe they had a priest in each group. I mean, where they lived.
Yeah, well, the priests, when they're given their allotment, the Levites, when they're given their inheritance, right, they're given cities all throughout. They're not given a land. They're given
right.
cities.
Maybe that's why, because they
yeah.
had to perform
yeah.
their duties yeah. in other places.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm thinking, as we're reading all this, and we're like, wow, that is just, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
You know, all the rules. Is it possible that this is more about just being obedient to what God and training, getting them kind of like you do a kid, you know, you train them to be obedient, you know,
right.
when they're adults. And so to me, it's like, this is just obedience. Mm-hmm. This isn't about, you got to do 500 things.
Right.
This is about following the rules mm-hmm. and being obedient, mm-hmm. even when you think they're ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, well, and the point of a lot of these rules, right, especially the clean, unclean, is to say God is holy. It is emphasizing God is holy. He is set apart. So we don't get to come to tabernacle any willy-nilly way we want to, right? There are very specific rules how you approach God. And remember, this is all set up in the context of Nadab and Abihu. They came to God the way they wanted, and they got zapped for it. So God says, now, these are the rules for how you approach me. So these are the times when you are not allowed to approach me. And you've had a skin disease. You are outside the camp. This is now what you have to do and to be able to approach my holiness again. Okay? Okay, so you make the guilt offering sacrifice, the blood, right? Then this is the second time you have blood on you, right? First from the bird on that first day, and now on day 8, it's on your ear, thumb, and toe. What does that remind us of?
Anointing the priests.
Okay, now these guys, the lepers, are not being anointed as priests, but it's that same idea. They are being consecrated, brought back. They're not being made holy, but they are being brought back into fellowship with God. Okay? The blood purifies and cleanses them. Again, then the oil is offered to God as a wave offering. Then it is sprinkled 7 times before God. And then that is also put on the ear, thumb, and toe. And notice verse 17, it says, on the blood of the guilt offering. Okay, so the blood is already there first on your ear, thumb, and toe, and then the oil goes on top of that on your ear, thumb, and toe. Okay, you are now back in union and fellowship with God. The oil that was offered to God is now on your ear, thumb, and toe, and then the rest of it's poured on your head. Okay, to symbolize cleansing of you from this leprosy. Okay, now the leper is fully clean. Well, he has to make the other sacrifices, but he is fully clean, reinstated, and he can offer all the sacrifices that God commanded. He can now come to tabernacle.
Did you do the others?
Not yet.
Oh, so he's fully reinstated technically before the others.
Right. Well, I mean, it says end of 18, so the priest shall make atonement on his behalf before the Lord. Okay, I mean, he has to finish everything, right? It's not like he could quit after the guilt offering and be fully clean. He has to finish the entire ritual, okay? Because at the end of verse 20, it says, and he will be clean. But the idea is, after these offerings, then he is fully reinstated to fellowship with God and can be offer any sacrifices after this, okay? Verse 19 and 20, really short. The priest shall next offer the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. Then afterwards he shall slaughter the burnt offering. The priest shall offer up the burnt offering and the grain offering on the altar. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him, and he will be clean. Okay? So we don't get a lot of details about the sin, burnt, and grain offerings. They're just made. Okay? So the guilt offering seems to be the big deal here with the cleansing of the leper. But after the guilt offering, you get the sin offering. And then after the sin offering, you get the sacrifices of worship, the burnt and the grain offering. Okay? All offerings except the peace offering were made to cleanse the leper. I wonder if he was wealthy enough, if he would have brought a peace offering anyway. It was just something I thought, because this is a joyous occasion, right? You've been outside the camp. Now, finally, you are reinstated. You can have fellowship with God again. I think that that would be a great time for a peace offering to rejoice. It's not commanded. I just wonder, because a peace offering was voluntary. So I just wonder if some of them would have done that anyway. I don't know. Right.
What if they were so poor they didn't have three lambs?
Great question. Verse 21. But if he is poor. And his means are insufficient, then he is to take one male lamb for a guilt offering. Remember, the guilt offering is the only offering that there is no exception for the poor. All the other offerings, there's an exception for the poor. The guilt offering, there is not. So he has to bring one male lamb, 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour, and 2 young pigeons or turtle doves, verse 22. Okay? So you were supposed to bring three lambs and 3/10 of an ephah of flour. If you are poor, you can bring one lamb, 2 birds, and only 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour. So even the flour is cut down by a third. Okay? This is verse 21 to 32. We're not going to read it because it's all exactly the same. Okay? It's all exactly the same procedure as before. It's just if you are poor, there is a concession for you, but you still have to drum up enough money to buy at least one lamb. Okay? Because the guilt offering, you had to have a lamb. But everything else you get, you know, and you have to bring the same amount of oil, but you can, yeah, 2 birds and then only 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour. So there is a concession for those who are poor. Okay, but remember, this would be a joyous ceremony because you have moved from outside the camp to inside the camp and now to full fellowship with God in the tabernacle, full restoration. All right. Questions about the cleansing of a leper? Okay, chapter 14, 33 to 57. We're not going to read all of this, okay? But this is the law of what you did if you had a mark in your house. Okay, so verse 34, when you enter the land of Canaan, which I give you for a possession, okay? So remember, they're not in Canaan. They're out in the wilderness. Okay? They are still at Mount Sinai, I believe. So these laws are looking forward to when they're actually living in a house with stones. Okay, because right now they're living in tents. So if they get a mark on their tent, that's going to fall under chapter 13 if there's a mark on a garment, right, or a sack or whatever. So that's going to fall under those laws because a tent is cloth like that. Okay, so this is looking forward to when they're living in Canaan. Notice verse 34 says, when you enter the land of Canaan, which I give you for possession, and I put a mark of leprosy on a house. Okay? So, God is in total control. He is totally sovereign, even of the mold and the mildew in your house. Because who put it there? God did. Okay? He has a reason why he does everything, even down to the mold and the mildew of your house. All right? Partially, this is to teach Israel about holiness. Okay. So mildew or dry rot or mold can affect houses just like they can affect clothes and just like skin disease affects a human. Okay. The procedure is the same as chapter 13. If you look in verse 37, it says, so he shall look at the mark, and if the mark on the walls of the house has greenish or reddish depressions and appears deeper than the surface. That seems to be the key to all these marks of leprosy, if it is deeper than the surface. Okay, so if you have a mark in your house, you have to go get the priest, say there's a mark in my house. If you look at verse 36, it says, the priest shall command that they empty the house. So everything is taken out of the house, so not everything in the house becomes unclean. Okay, so all your stuff doesn't have to be unclean as well, and you have to break all your pots and wash all your other stuff. So you empty the house, the priest comes in, he looks at the mark, sees if it's deeper than the surface or not. Then he quarantines the house 7 days, just like with the clothes or with the people in chapter 13. Okay, if it has spread, verse 39, the priest shall return on the seventh day and make an inspection. If the mark has indeed spread in the walls of the house, the priest shall order them to tear out the stones. Okay, so they rip out the stones that have the mark, that are infected. They scrape all the plaster off the inside of the house. Okay? Then they fix it. They put in new stones and they replaster the whole house. Verse 43. If, however, the mark breaks out again, so if the mark comes back, the mold or mildew comes back, your entire house is unclean. You have to tear the whole thing down. Okay? Now, if it fixed it, you don't. Okay? If tearing out the stones and scraping off the plaster and repairing it all fixes it, you don't. But if the mark comes back, then the whole house is unclean and you have to tear it down. Okay? Verse 45, he shall therefore tear down the house. It's stones, it's timbers, all the plaster. Okay? And take them outside the city to an unclean place. If, verse 46 and 47, you go in the house while it's in quarantine or while it's unclean, right, then of course you become unclean. Okay, but just until evening, you just wash your clothes and wash yourself and you're clean after evening. Okay, so very similar to chapter 13. 48 to 53, if once you tear out the stones and replaster the house, the mark does not come back, then it is clean. Okay, and then you have to go through the same procedure that you do with the leper to clean the house. Okay, the same initial procedure. So you get the two live birds, you get the cedar, you get the hyssop, and you get the yarn, and you dip everything, the bird too, and you sprinkle the house, and then you let the bird go. Okay, then the house is clean. Notice there are no sacrifices, because the house just has to become clean. The house doesn't have to be in fellowship with God. Okay. So, but the same procedure that the initial procedure that the leper has to go through, the house has to go through as well.
Okay. Isn't it interesting that back they talk about the reddish or green?
Yeah, depression.
Yeah. And you know, I never realized that before. In our bathroom at home in California, ages ago, we had kind of a white, like this color, like just a linoleum.
Yeah.
And there was this red mark that kept coming in different little spots. And I could not figure out. I thought the kids had colored on it. Yeah, it was mold underneath the, because we just were on a slab.
Oh.
You know, we didn't have basement. It was just on a slab, and wet had gotten on the slab. And it came up, and it was red.
You were ceremonial on Facebook, yeah.
Right.
Everything you did is the whole time that you lived in that house is
unclean.
Right. Interesting that it is really red or green.
Yeah. Oh.
And ours was red, and I could not figure that out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I should have just read this. I would have known how to do it. Well, I kept scrubbing it. You know, I was like scrubbing the, you know,
you should have just taking your whole house down.
Pretty much after that we did.
Oh, my.
That is so interesting.
Okay. Verses 54 to 57 is just a summary of chapters 13 and 14. This is the law for any mark of leprosy, even in a scale, and for the leprous garment or house, for a swelling, for a scab, for a bright spot, to teach when they are unclean and when they are clean. This is the law of leprosy. Okay?
Do we know how long these were actually followed?
Oh, through the time of Jesus. I would say probably until 70 AD.
Well, okay.
On and off, yes. 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 Judges time, king time. But we do know that in the 400 years of silence, Israel became pretty. I mean, because that's when you got the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Those all developed during those 400 years. Okay. So, but from this time, again, on and off, faithful, unfaithful, to 70 AD. When they could no longer do a lot of these things because the temple was gone.
Right.
Yes.
It certainly wasn't consistent.
No. No, because they find the law like back in some corner of the temple and they'd totally forgotten about it. So, correct. Yes. But after coming back from exile, that really shook Israel up enough that they, Judah up enough that they were more faithful after that. Okay. Let's go to Matthew 8. Can someone read for me verse 1 through 4? Matthew 8, 1 through 4.
When Jesus came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him, and a leper came to him and bowed down before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I am willing, be cleansed." And immediately the leprosy was cleansed, and Jesus said to him, "See that you tell no one, but go, show yourself to the priest, and present the offering that Moses commanded as a testimony to them."
Okay. So, now we have Jesus, and how does Jesus deal with lepers? What does he do? What does Jesus do? Verse 3. Jesus touches him. Okay, what was Jesus not supposed to do? Don't touch them. Their uncleanness is contagious. But what happens? Jesus touches them, and what happens? It says specifically, they are cleansed. Cleanness was never contagious. Uncleanness was contagious. Cleanness was not contagious. It wasn't like if I'm clean and you're not, I can touch you and you become clean. It was the other way around. Uncleanness was always contagious. But here Jesus, he does the no-no, right? And Jesus is God, right? He could have just spoke and they could have been cleansed. But what does he specifically do? He specifically touches them. But because he is God, he cannot be unclean. Right? And so his cleanness then is contagious, not their uncleanness, because God is more powerful than their quote-unquote sin. I mean, because leprosy is not necessarily a result of a specific sin, but it is a result of the fall of sin in general. Okay, but what does Jesus tell him to do too? Go show himself and make all the offering, right? So Jesus tells him, follow the law, do Leviticus 14. Okay, do what you're supposed to do. Okay, so when Jesus comes, he sets up a new system, right? Where he is bringing reconciliation between God and man, right? There is going to be no longer this clean, unclean. If you are deformed or have a skin disease, you're outside the camp, right? Deformed priests, they couldn't serve. Deformed sons of Aaron were not allowed to be priests, right? Because only the perfect, quote unquote, perfect could come into the tabernacle, okay, and serve. Okay. There is that we don't, because God has become man, we no longer need the picture of the imperfect or the unwhole being excluded. Okay. So I just find it fascinating that Jesus specifically touches, right? And without the background of Leviticus, you read it and you're just like, okay, whatever. Right? But with the background of Leviticus and the law, Jesus touching the leper becomes a much bigger deal. Okay, questions?
It's surprising that somebody didn't go tattle to the priest that he had touched.
True, but maybe because those who were there, I mean, he says tell no one, so it seems that it must have been at least semi-private, you know? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Like raising the dead. What?
On the Sabbath.
Yeah.
The blind man.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in trouble enough.
All right. Any other questions? Leviticus 14. Okay. Leviticus 15. Bodily discharges. What we all want to talk about today. I told Marion this is maybe a good time for the kids to not be in here. But, okay, so in here we talk about four kinds, right? So abnormal for men, normal for women, then abnormal for women. Okay, so it kind of goes on ABBA kind of, okay? So first, we have Leviticus 15, 1 through 15. We're not going to necessarily read all this, but this is abnormal for men. Okay, verse 2, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when a man has a discharge from his body, his discharge is unclean. So this is something that is not normal. Okay, from as early as the translation of the Septuagint, People have thought that this is maybe gonorrhea. Okay? Okay? But in the Bible, like even with the skin disease, the concern is not for the specifics of what this disease or problem is. Okay? The concern is that you are unclean. Okay? So whatever it is, the Bible is not concerned about that. It's concerned that this makes you unclean. Okay? And this not only made the man unclean, it made him infectious unclean. Quote unquote, infectious unclean. Because look, verse 3, every bed on which the person with a discharge lies becomes unclean. Verse 5, anyone, moreover, who touches his bed shall wash his clothes and bathe in the water, be unclean. Whoever sits on the thing that he's been sitting on. So this man, anything he touches becomes unclean. Anyone who touches him becomes unclean. Anyone who touches anything that he has touched becomes unclean. Okay, so this is like pretty serious unclean, infectious unclean. Okay, if you look at verse 7, also whoever touches the person with the discharge shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean. Where does it say?
Saddle.
Yep, the saddle. There's, where is it? Yes. Hate, thank you. Oh, yeah. Or if the man with the discharge spits on one who is clean. So if if you're too close and he's talking to you and accidentally spits on you, then you become unclean. Okay? So like I said, some of these things, no one else is going to know. Right? If you're talking to someone and they spit on you, right, you're not going to know. And so that also means you have to be honest about what's wrong with you. Because he could keep it a secret and not tell anyone, and now he's out there spreading his uncleanness all around, right? So he has to be honest. The person who got spit on has to be honest, right? But remember, this is all in the context of Nadab and Abihu. So you better believe if Israel took it seriously that they would do this because they did not want to come into tabernacle unclean. Okay? Verse 11, likewise, whomever the one with the discharge touches without having rinsed his hand in water shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean till evening. So it's interesting that the man can touch someone so long as he has washed his hands. But if he has not washed his hands, then that person also becomes unclean. Okay. Now, verse 12. However, an earthenware vessel which the person with the discharge touches shall be broken, and every wooden vessel shall be rinsed in water. Okay, so all the pots he touches have to be broken, and every wooden thing he touches has to be washed. Now, this is inconvenient, very inconvenient. However, where does he not have to go? He doesn't have to go outside the camp. He can stay home. So this is very inconvenient. The uncleanliness is very catching, very infectious, right? But he gets to stay home. He does not get sent outside the camp. Okay, so this is less serious uncleanness than the skin disease. Okay? Verse 13 to 15, now when the man with the discharge becomes cleansed from his discharge, then he shall count off for himself 7 days for his cleansing. He shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body in running water, and will become clean. Then on the eighth day, he shall take for himself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons and come before the Lord to the doorway of the tent of meeting and give them to the priest. And the priest shall offer them one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf before the Lord because of his discharge. Okay, so when he is healed, no longer sick, he has to wait 7 days, and then he gets to bring offering to the Lord. Notice it's 2 birds for everybody. This is a poor man's offering. But even the wealthy, it doesn't matter. You don't bring 2 lambs, okay? You just bring 2 birds, one for a sin and one for a burnt offering, and then you are restored to fellowship with the Lord. So again, even in this is less serious uncleanness than skin disease. I mean, skin disease, you had to bring 3 lambs, okay, and a grain offering. And here it's just 2 birds, regardless of who you are. Okay? So that's the abnormal discharge for a man. Verse 16 through 18 is the normal, Okay, now if a man has a seminal emission, he shall bathe all his body in water and be unclean until evening. As for any garment or any leather on which there is a seminal emission, it shall be washed with water and be unclean until evening. If a man lies with a woman so that there is a seminal emission, they shall both bathe in water and be unclean until evening. Okay, so this is normal, so no sacrifice is made. Okay, because, yeah, it's normal. It's not a result of sin. The other, the sickness, right, is only a general result of sin. But still, but a seminal emission made a man unclean. Anything it touched, including the woman. Okay, you had to wash and become unclean. Now, what's interesting about this, in the ancient Near East, right, sex was part of their worship because they thought that having sex would make the gods send rain to fertilize the ground, quote unquote, fertilize the ground and make things grow, right? And so you had your temple prostitutes and all this stuff, and it was just all part of their worship service. What does God do? He goes the complete opposite direction, right? It makes you unclean, so you are not allowed to come to tabernacle, all right? It's not saying that sex is sinful or wrong. It's just not to be mixed with the worship of God. Okay? God sets Israel apart. Okay? One, if you've had sex, you can't even go to tabernacle that day, right? Let alone having a spot dedicated to prostitution at tabernacle, right? That would have been an abomination because you're not even allowed to go that day. Okay, this also made prostitutes in Israel technically outcasts, right? Because from their job, they are constantly unclean and would never have been allowed into tabernacle. Okay, but this law really sets Israel apart because sex was never to have to do with the worship of God. And in the ancient Near East, that's what it was part of. Questions? Okay, 19 to 24, we have a woman's period, all right? When a woman has a discharge, if her discharge in her body is blood, she shall continue in her menstrual impurity for 7 days, okay? 24, this is normal. Your normal monthly period, okay? So when you're on your period, you are the same infectious unclean for 7 days as the man is with his abnormal. Okay, so it's the same deal. Whatever you sit on, whoever you touch, whoever touches what you sit on or lie on, touch becomes unclean. Okay? Verse 24 says, if a man actually lies with her so that her menstrual impurity is on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. This most likely is if your period happens to start while you're having sex. Then he's unclean for 7 days because there are other places that actually forbid it. If you go to Leviticus 18, verse 19, Leviticus 18, 19 says, also you shall not approach a woman to uncover her nakedness during her menstrual impurity. And then if you go one page over, 20, verse 18, or two pages, it says, if there is a man who lies with a menstruous woman and uncovers her nakedness. He has laid bare her flow and she has exposed the flow of her blood. Thus, both of them shall be cut off. Okay, so it was forbidden. Okay, so a woman is contagious in unclean during her period. But these laws provide a woman with a break from housework, from caring for children, and marital relations for a week. Okay? Because, I mean, if everything you touch becomes unclean and anyone who touches the things that you've touched become unclean, you're going to figure out a way to do things a little differently.
So they're obviously contagious only in the unclean department, not in human menstruation is not contagious.
Correct. 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 No, that's what I mean. Infection. The uncleanliness, the uncleanness is infectious. Okay, but again, no sacrifices are required because this is normal. Now, what's interesting is both of my commentaries said that because of early marriage and demands of constant childbearing, they might not have gotten their period very often. They also nursed until the kid was three, four, whatever years old. So depending on the woman, right, they might not have had a monthly cycle like we do, because it's like you have a baby and as soon as your cycle comes back, you're pregnant again, you know, and then you have a baby. So they think that maybe these, well, these laws would apply either if you're barren, right, if you can't have kids, or to younger teenage girls who haven't gotten married yet, okay? But it might, you know, we think, oh my goodness, every week out of every month, you know, that's, but if you're constantly pregnant or having babies or nursing, you might, these rules might not apply to you for a good chunk of your life, okay? Also, this would have been a barrier for young men, right, to have too close a contact with women that they did not know, because they don't want to become accidentally unclean and then go to tabernacle and bear the judgment of God. Okay, so one, it might not have been as inconvenient as we think, right? Because their society was different than ours. And two, it might have been helped with purity a little bit.
Do you know if women went through like menopause earlier?
I have no idea.
Because of, you know, just being having a rougher life.
Well,
you know,
Sarah didn't.
Well, but didn't she did. She was done. And then she got pregnant anyway. Yeah, but I mean, she was also 90, right, something, so I don't know.
But I was just thinking, like, even when you're past childbearing,
yeah,
but maybe, or maybe they just continued to have childbearing closer to
menopause, yeah.
Plenty of
like
Old
that.
Testament women that have babies later.
Yeah. But I mean, there were also plenty of barren. I mean, that's what it seems to be. But until the, I mean, like for Sarah and Rachel, right, these laws. But even back then, it was Rachel, right, who she's sitting on the idols and she doesn't get up because she says the time of woman is. So there was at least somewhat of this tradition even before the law. But this makes it very specific of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. Yeah, Benjamin, yes.
I mean, it's really only the convenience of modern times that we have the ability to take care of that issue.
Right.
And go about our day while not just bleeding everywhere.
Right,
so,
right.
Then they didn't necessarily have that.
Right, system. Right, right,
yeah.
Right.
They didn't have the Diva cup.
Right. Correct, yes. Right. But it would have also been a break for them because they weren't really allowed to do anything, so.
Which is great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's start that again.
Okay. Any questions? Verses 25 to 33, this is abnormal for women. So if you have bleeding other than normal menstruation, okay, you would have been unclean. Just like during your period. So that infectious unclean where everything you touch, anyone you touch, all that. Okay? For as long as it lasts. Okay? Then after it stops, same as the men. Okay? Verse 28, when she becomes clean from her discharge, she shall count off for herself 7 days and afterwards she will be clean. Then on the eighth day, 29, she shall take for herself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons and bring them in to the priest to the doorway of the tent of meeting. Okay, the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. So the priest shall make atonement on her behalf before the Lord because of her impure discharge. Okay, so it's the same deal. 2 birds, same as the man. It's the poor person's offering. Okay.
Now, was this bleeding, was it only vaginal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It wasn't any type of...
No. 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 No, that's the point of this chapter.
Okay.
Yes. So, verse 31, thus you shall keep the sons of Israel separated from their uncleanness so that they will not die in their uncleanness by their defiling of my tabernacle. This is the point. Okay, you cannot be like Nadab and Abihu. Now, they weren't technically unclean, but they did things their own way. Okay. But if you are unclean and you come into tabernacle, you defile the holy things of God and are going to incur the judgment of God. Okay, this is a life and death situation. So you better know when you are clean and when you are unclean. You better be sure that when you go to tabernacle, you are clean. Okay. Being unclean itself was not a sin. It became a sin if you came to worship God that way, if you entered tabernacle while you were unclean. Okay, Israel is a holy nation, distinct in every area of life from the Gentiles. That's the point. Okay. So God is holy. Israel had to live every area of their life had to be different, had to be focused on the holiness of God. Okay. Let's go. Go ahead. Yeah, right.
Kind of like the whole world knows what's going on with you privately.
So right. Privacy. No. Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, for the man, right. That's something, well, I mean, maybe your wife would know, but that's something you could keep as very few people know. But if you are going to go to, you can't go to tabernacle unclean. And so people are going to know, oh, there's something going on. Joe Schmo hasn't been to tabernacle for 5 weeks.
Like King Solomon, didn't he have many concubines?
Yes.
So that implies that he probably was having sex every night. So how could he ever, right?
Be clean. Well, you're
still have to do sacrifices? Or still have
like
to
I clean? Said, you can time things, right? Because you're unclean until evening. So you can go to tabernacle in the morning and come home, right, and be unclean until evening because then you are clean again in the morning. Okay.
I was thinking like a full 24, but yeah, that makes sense.
No. I mean, that's my understanding at least is that,
right.
You know, if it's 4 p.m., well, the next day starts at sunset. So my understanding is until sunset, then you would be unclean and then you're fine the next day. I mean, but you'd also have to wash, right? So think about them. They were also, I mean, part of these laws, it's not the main emphasis of these laws, but part of these laws is it just kept them cleaner. Naturally, because they were washing. Okay, let's go one. Right. Right. Let's go to Mark. Chapter 5. Can someone read verse? Well, that's a big chunk. Let's see. Verses 25 to 34. That's kind of a big chunk, but the verses aren't long. Mark 5:25-34.
A woman who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years and had endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she thought, if I just touch his garments, I will get well. Immediately the flow of her blood was dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see the woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction."
Okay, after studying Leviticus 15, what shocked me about this is that this woman ventures out in the crowd. She is infectious unclean. Anyone she touches becomes unclean. But she has the faith to go out, and then she touches Jesus' garment, which would make that unclean, which is touching Jesus, which would make him unclean, right, theoretically. But instead, the cleanness flows off of Jesus onto her instead of her uncleanness. But she is bold enough to venture out, even though she has been like perpetually unclean for 12 years. Can you imagine? 12 years.
Not just bold enough, but strong in her faith.
Right, right. And that's what he says. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Okay. But Jesus, is because he is God, makes her clean instead of her making him unclean, okay? So this is a new age. God is there in bodily form, right? And he is the one that makes them clean instead of her uncleanness being infectious. I mean, even the disciples say, right? There's so many people, everyone's touching you. How can you say you touched me, right? But The woman, yeah, that just shocked me that she is out there even though she is so unclean and has been for 12 years. You know, how depressing.
The Greek verb translated has made you well can also be rendered as has made you whole.
Yeah.
It indicates her healing was complete. It's the same Greek word often translated to save. And is the normal New Testament word for saving from sin, which strongly suggests that the woman's faith also led to spiritual salvation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So. So.
Now it makes sense why we need to know Leviticus more.
Yes. It makes, well, and that's.
How many times I probably read that and just was like, okay, and now you're like, you make sense. Like, he was pretty much preparing everyone because it was to get rid of the model because he was technically the new one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right, and understanding the Old Testament helps us understand the New Testament better.